An hour later, Cecilia felt that even the singularity line had its virtues. Cecilia dismounted at last, feeling almost smug. She had seen, in the look on Slangsby's face, that he had not expected her to be that good. And Marcia, who had surely rejuved more than once, must not have expected it either. They both looked slightly stunned. It might be worth it to have one just for fun, just for herself. Not to breed, she still didn't like the structure, but to ride. An embryo transfer to Rotterdam, brought out of one of the big old mares Meredith kept for that purpose. In a few years, she could play with it. Hard to believe she had those years now, could look that far ahead. It did change the decision points.
Let's talk about this, Marcia.
She was very glad she'd taken care to see her bankers before coming out here. Marcia had made everyone on the circuit uncomfortable about money years ago, and that sort of stinginess didn't change.
Excuse me, Commander, but Captain Serrano asked if she could come aboard. She'd like to speak to you personally.
It was past half, in the second shift, a time when attention blurred toward dinner. A time when, according to Kutsudis and his instruments, Garavay gathered with his conspirators for a daily conference. The guard at the access, crisply efficient in his spotless uniform, watched Harris and the others closely as he spoke into the intercom. Harris tried not to hold her breath visibly. He must want her to come. It would make things so much easier for him. A Serrano with an armed yacht was the only menace he faced. If the mouse walked into the cat's parlor, it saved the trouble of hunting it down. He had to be smart enough to figure that out.
Oh, very well. Yes. Yes, do bring her aboard. Any of her crew that came along. Delighted.
Delighted.
Harris let no hint of her own delight at setting foot on a cruiser deck again slip past her guard. She was the renegade, the outcast who hadn't dared to come back in the fleet. She was a coward who hadn't yet admitted it. She let herself shiver as Garavay's security patted her down, as if it bothered her. None of her weapons would show. Behind her, her crew submitted as well. She had worried some about Meharry, who had been a bit too eager to come along, but Meharry said nothing untoward. They were all in obvious civilian ship suits with Cecilia's family name stenciled, a few hours before, on the chest. Harris had not known how Garavay would react to this many crew. She had alternate plans for different possibilities, but they were led to his office in a clump.
Ah, Captain. May I call you Harris?
Garavay eyed her up and down with the clear intent of discovering any lingering scrap of backbone. As she had hoped, he had not dismissed the other officers. She had suspected he would prefer to humiliate her before an audience. Harris drooped as submissively as she could. She scarcely glanced at the other officers in the compartment. They would all have been junior to her if she were still in. They were all junior to Garavay, and they were all conspirators. She hoped Kutsudis was right about that. She had enough innocent blood on her conscience.
You're the Commodore.
Right, I am. You know, I really wish you had left here with your rich lady, your owner. Might have to confiscate that ship if there's an emergency.
I know. She just wouldn't listen. She doesn't understand things. She doesn't believe it can happen to her.
Kutsudis had assured her that Garavay could not have intercepted the messages between her and Cecilia, supposedly discussing that possibility. She hoped not, because all the messages had been fakes. Cecilia had gone blissfully into that horse farm and had yet to emerge. The safest place she could be right now.
I suppose you'd install your own crew?
Do you want the job?
Harris shook her head, looking down as if ashamed. She was afraid she couldn't control the expression in her eyes.
No, I... You know, I had the chance to go back in fleet.
And got out while the going was good, huh? Well, probably wise. And your crew, ex-fleet as well. I don't suppose any of them would want a berth on a real fighting ship again.
No, sir.
Shut up. Don't ruin this.
I got more than enough scars, sir.
I hope we won't have to impress you, then. If there is trouble and we run short of whatever your specialty was...
He waited, But Meharry didn't enlighten him. Harris stared at the carpet, waiting, feeling the others at her back.
Don't look so worried, Harris. I'm not planning to run off with your owner's ship and your crew unless I have to. You'll never have to fight another battle. Now, what was it you wanted to talk to me about?
Well, Commodore, it's partly my owner and partly the local government. You see, before you arrived, they kind of got to asking me things.
Sir, an urgent signal.
There it was, the prearranged distractor, one of Kutsudis's elegant fakeries. A bauble on the ship's scans that might be incoming ships, something the bridge crew would have to report, and Garavay would have to acknowledge. Garavay turned away, reaching for his desk controls. His officers, for that instant, looked where he looked. No one needed a signal. Harris threw herself forward and sideways in a roll and kick combination that caught Garavay on the angle of the jaw. Before he could recover, she was on him, the edge of her hand smashing his larynx. Her other hand had reached the comm button, preventing its automatic alarm at the sudden loss of contact. Garavay thrashed against his desk and fell to the deck. She looked up to meet four triumphant grins. Too early for those, they had just started. She leaned over and removed Garavay's earplug, inserting it in her own ear. She listened, only half-hearing what she already knew, but aware of a little bubble of delight at being once more connected to a real ship's command center, even if it wasn't her ship. Though it was, or would be, if the rest of this worked. Already the others were stripping the bodies of their uniforms. Oblo looked up and waved something, a data strip it looked like. Harris leaned again to Garavay, now unconscious, his body twitching with oxygen deprivation, and unpinned his insignia. Her nose wrinkled involuntarily at the unpleasant stench. She ignored the source and pinned the insignia to her own uniform. Thank goodness she had a uniform that could pass for fleet in a pinch, because this was a pinch indeed. Petrus held up the uniform he'd removed from someone with Major's rings.
I can wear this.
No. It won't really convince them, and once they discover where the uniforms came from, they'll worry again. I'm the key. If they accept me, they'll accept you.
Otherwise, of course, they were all dead. In her ear, the flow of information stopped. She hit the comm button twice, the usual signal of a busy captain that the message had been received. From Garavay's inside pocket, no more twitches now, Harris took the thin wand that gave access to captain's command switches. From here out, it would get more dangerous. The wand slid into the desk slot easily. The hard part came next. The use of the captain's wand triggered a demand for an identity check.
Identify yourself.
Serrano, Harris.
Harris added her identification numbers and rank, mentally crossing more fingers than she owned. If Kutsudis was right, her Aunt Admiral might have managed to leave a back door in the fleet database. Lights flared on the captain's desk.
Why is Serrano, Harris, Commander, using Garavay, Deccan, Sostratos, Commander's wand?
Emergency. On the orders of Admiral Vita Serrano.
Authorization number.
A sticky one. The only number her aunt had shared with her recently was the Serrano encryption code on that data cube. Would Aunt Admiral have risked putting her family code into the database, hiding it in plain sight, as it were? Right now, Harris believed her Aunt Admiral might have done anything. She found another mental finger to cross and gave that number. After the second group, the computer blinked all the lights.
Authorization accepted.
So, Aunt Admiral had had more in mind than an apology, had she? And had she known Harris would be in this sort of trouble? Kutsudis's remark about lightning rods flashed through her mind. Interesting. Infuriating. But she had no time to sort it out. Now, a touch on the desk opened the service functions. She picked up the command headset and settled it on her hair.
You don't want the combat helmet?
No. If we can do this at all, we can do it this way. We cannot take the whole ship by force if everyone's turned.
She could, with the command wand, destroy it and everyone on it, and in the process, the station to which they were docked. But she hoped very much that her string of good guesses would continue to hold.
They need to see my face. I'm legitimate, remember? The computer accepts me. My aunt is an admiral.
On the desk, she keyed up the status displays. Personnel. There were 15 more known traitors on this ship, and 4 on one of the patrol craft. Kutsudis thought he knew which 15, and she located them. On duty, 6. One on the bridge, and 5 elsewhere about the ship.
You can't take the bridge alone.
No, but I can isolate the compartments.
She touched the control panels. Now, each was blocked from communication with the others, and if she could get control of the bridge crew, if they believed her, there was a chance of capturing the other traitors without a major fight in the ship. The first thing was to establish her authority with even one legitimate onboard officer. Now on the bridge was a major Kutsudas thought unlikely to be a traitor. Again, he had better be right. She selected his personal comm code from the officer's list.
Major Svatek, report to the captain's office.
Yes, sir.
He had a voice that gave nothing away. She felt no intuitive nudge of like or dislike. Harris nodded to her crew. They placed themselves on either side of the door and waited.